Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has considerable personal experience with and command of intelligence matters is our first guest. My friend and colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs, Fred Flights. He is, as I suspect you know, a career intelligence professional with some 20 years of service in the Central Intelligence Agency, also service as John Bolton's Chief of Staff when John was an Undersecretary of State, and subsequently he served as a professional staff member under the great Chairman Pete Hoekstra of the House Intelligence Committee. It's always good to have him in the House, virtually at least. Fred Flights, welcome back. It's good to talk with you.
Hey, Frank, good to be here.
Well, we haven't had a chance to catch up on air since the president finally announced what he was going to do about the Obama bomb deal. A dangerous and growing national security fraud, of course, being the topic, the title of your most recent book. Fred, tell us what you made of the president's decision.
As your listeners know, the president has to certify this nuclear deal to Congress every 90 days. It's in the interest of the United States and that Iran is in compliance. He made that certification twice this year, but said last time in July he's not going to make it again because he doesn't think that this deal is in the interest of the U.S., and he thinks Iran is at least violating the spirit of the agreement. I think they're violating the letter of the agreement, but I don't want to get into that right now. So the president said on Friday he's not going to certify this agreement to Congress. He's sending the agreement to Congress to fix it, and he said in his speech that if it isn't fixed, he's going to withdraw. Now, that everybody knows. What people didn't know, and this is crucial, is that the president spoke to my former boss and friend, Ambassador John Bolton, Thursday afternoon before the speech, and they had a very crucial discussion about this agreement. And the president made key changes to his speech based on his discussion with Ambassador Bolton, the most important of which, he said, it is entirely up to the president as to whether he stays in this agreement and that he reserves the right to withdraw from this agreement. And basically he's saying to Congress and to U.S. diplomats and to Europe, you want to keep this agreement? You better make substantial changes to it or I'm going to withdraw.
Now, Fred Flights, when you say that the president is calling on Congress to make substantial changes to the agreement, how would that be done? Is that some sort of formal amendment of it by the Congress of the United States, or is that, you know, imposing new sanctions which might have that kind of effect? How would this actually be operationalized, as you understand it?
Well, Congress would have to pass legislation, and there's two things it can do. First of all, it can extend sanctions, reimpose sanctions that were lifted under the agreement. And under the Corker-Cardin Act, there's a provision for those sanctions to be passed on an expedited basis, but it would require a majority of votes. It couldn't be filibustered. The problem is, I'm afraid that I don't think there are enough moderate Republicans to vote for that. Congress also would have to pass legislation to fix the agreement, and that concerns uranium enrichment, the production of plutonium, the very short length of this agreement, the sunset clauses, ballistic missiles, sponsorship of terror, a variety of things, and inspections, very weak inspections, a variety of things that make this a very bad deal. Realistically, Frank, that's not going to happen. And even if Congress did pass it, which I think there's zero chance that will happen, Iran is not going to agree to that. However, the president's doing something Barack Obama refused to do. He's working with Congress, the co-equal branch of government, to tell them, let's work together on this. He's given them an opportunity to do their job. You may remember that Barack Obama went around Congress. He did not let the Senate ratify this agreement. Well, President Trump is giving Congress an opportunity to do the right thing.
Well, but again, as a practical matter, Fred Flights, if Congress is unwilling or unable, at least, to make changes in one or the other of the forms that you've just described, the president has said, you know, he's going to get out of the deal. That would seem then to be in the cards as a practical matter. Is that a fair reading of it as you see it?
Yes, and it's an interesting observation. I think he clearly indicated he's pulling out of the agreement unless it's fixed. However, there are members of his cabinet, including UN Ambassador Haley, as well as National Security Advisor McMaster, who are trying to say, we're not going to get out of the agreement, we're going to fix it, and they're not talking about what will happen if we don't fix it. It troubles me that there's members of the president's cabinet who are pushing a different policy. And Rex Tillerson is even worse. And we've talked about that on this show before, too.
Well, there's a lot of insubordinate subordinates, it seems. And I've been given to understand that the UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, had been rather robust, at least relative to some of these others, in making the case for the idea of changing course, shall we say, with respect to this deal. But if she's not prepared to have him actually get out from under it, that would be putting her in the camp of the folks who are part of the problem, not the solution, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me add this point. There are a group of former conservatives who think we can fix the deal. And I think they have talked a lot of Republicans into this idea that somehow, magically, a bill can pass, the deal will be fixed, and poof, we can stay in it. And it's just nonsense. That's not going to happen.
Fred, it's my reading that part of why this has proven persuasive to the president is that he was hearing from his subordinates, among others, that if he stayed in the deal, that would continue to have some effect on the Iranian nuclear activities and perhaps other activities. I did want to ask you, though, in a matter of hours after he took this step, essentially Iranian proxies invaded parts of the area that was on the cusp of becoming perhaps a sovereign Kurdistan. I think this is evidence of the kind of problem the president's been confronting in terms of bad advice from many of those around him, because he's been led to believe, it would appear, that this government in Iraq is both unified and sovereign and friendly, rather than what it is, it seems to me, which is increasingly just a cat's paw for Iran, and very dangerous at that. What are your thoughts?
That's exactly right. This is the Obama policy, the one Iraq policy, which is why the Obama administration was so reluctant to giving weapons to the Iraqi Kurds to fight ISIS. It was just so troubling, because I mean, you know, Iraqi Kurds, I meet with some in Washington sometimes. They would plead with us, help us. We're fighting the enemy here. This is an Obama policy. I think the Iranians probably retaliated because of the president's speech. But there's another issue here. We have to have a policy of telling the Iraqi government to stop collaborating with the Iranians, to stop relying on Iranian-trained Shiite militias, which are responsible for the birth of ISIS in the first place. The Obama administration just didn't want to hear that, and I wish someone would get the message to the president. This is a very important initiative that he has to do, and I don't think his current advisors are going to go down this road.
I don't either, and this is why we've been arguing strenuously that he needs a new set of advisors, for sure. Fred Flights, in that regard, there does seem to be a certain reluctance, shall we say, on the part of John Kelly, the president's chief of staff, to make changes, even in the face of this overt insubordination on the part of, I would argue, both H.R. McMaster and Rex Tillerson. Do you see any sign that that is likely to change anytime soon?
Well, I've been talking to my friend Sebastian Gorka. He thinks there's big changes coming. And Gorka and I believe that at the end of the year, the president is going to take an accounting of his staff and of the advice certain people gave him on who to hire, and may make some key changes. I'm hopeful that that is true, and really, he can't do it soon enough.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, from Sebastian Gorka's lips to God's ears, as a matter of fact, as well, it's high time. And as you say, Fred Flights, on all of these issues, Iran, Kurdistan, and so many others. He's been poorly served by the advice he's received, and it is time for a change. Thank you, my friend, for your time. It's always great to talk with you, and I appreciate so much what you do for all of us at the Center for Security Policy. I know you'll keep it up, and I know you'll come back to us again next week. Rowan Scarborough joins us next from the Washington Times. We'll talk about the idea of drafting women to serve in frontline combat positions. Who on earth cooked up that idea? That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.